It worked.
Woo. It did work.
It worked. YouTube. Woo. Number one. Not like X. Anyway, good evening, everyone. My name is Craig, or Crafty, from Craftworks Distillery, and I'm live in the shed, and you can see my boxes behind me. So, yeah, that's not a screenshot. That is live. That's real. That's me crapping on. So it's Aussie Craft Distillers shooting the shit, and we're up to episode 89. My God.
Good number.
Oh, shit show. Anyway, so tonight we are here with our good friend of the show, and this is why I was so laid back and casual. We know this man very well. This is Mr. Nick Hope from Dusty Barrel Distillery in Victoria. G'day, Nick.
G'day, Crafty. How are we going?
Mate, I think you know we've been talking for the last half an hour.
Amazingly, we all got on very, very early,
yeah,
which is almost unheard of. Normally, Crafty, you're here, what, a minute before?
Give me 2 minutes.
We're meant to go live? Maybe two, if we're lucky.
Yeah.
Whereas you were actually here over half an hour early.
Yeah, I know. I actually cooked dinner, had the air fryer going in the back of the distillery. I've been bottling. I better go check the still. I'm doing a stripping run. I've been very active running cellar door. And it's like, I think I'll settle in, pour myself a whiskey, chillax, and have a good conversation, or shoot the shit, as we say.
Indeed.
All right. Indeed. So let's kick off to the most important thing that we start with, and that's, what is everybody drinking today? I'll tell you what I'm drinking first, because I got it right here. So in my trusty Corolla glass that I nicked, thanks Dean, added to my collection, I'm going to be drinking tonight. I stumbled upon this in a bottle shop at a very, very attractive price, and I thought, I'll give it a go. So 78 degrees. I've tried 78 degrees before, but I've never tried the double distilled whiskey. So this is, for those who don't know, 78 degrees is down in South Australia. And I was there actually. So I'm doing that. And then I'm going to back it up with this little dinky sucker. So this is a
pomegranate something. Oh, schnapps.
Pomegranate schnapps. So Hillgrove Distillery in Mudgee. A fellow market vendor like me. And, Glenn has to put up with me ringing the bell and being noisy at the distillery. So I thought I'd give him a plug tonight with his schnapps and brandy. Very, very cool, people. Very, very cool.
Hamo has joined us, is a little known distillery called Craftworks. Ever heard of them? I'm drinking their KPD whiskey right now.
I hear it's pretty good.
Distiller's a bit of a prick, but.
You would never shut up, that guy.
Just talk.
He lives in his own little head. He really does. Hey.
Jesus, she calls you all the time. Whatever brain fart idea he's had. Fucking hell.
All right, Luke, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking.
Ooh, a little bit of a rice whiskey from Rice Man. Rice
whiskey, which I only literally just opened up today. And reading the handwritten notes on the back there, 48% sushi rice, Australian. So does that mean Australian sushi rice?
Yeah, Australian sushi rice. Yep. Grown in New South Wales.
Ah, and then I'm going to have a little taster of the neutral or the new make of that rice spirit. And as luck would have it, I'm also using a Corowa glass that I nicked.
Oh, you nicked it as well.
Thanks, Dean.
No, we're in the bar now, Dave. That's where those two glasses went.
Watch out for the invoice.
Two. I have a couple more than that.
All right. So tonight, tonight's a big night. We're talking about rice whiskey. And Nick, what have you got in your glass? And I think I know what it is. Rice man, tell us.
No, it is a rice whiskey. So
it's one I prepared earlier.
Yeah. So I think, just to, so we can talk about it, taste it, compare notes. So
now tasting it, I tasted it early on ages ago at our I think it was our Waterford event.
Yep.
You gave me an early taster of it back then. And I was pretty taken with it at the time. And now, having literally just opened this tonight, I've been saving. I haven't been tasting it. I haven't been sneaking any cheeky tasters just so I can appreciate it with you. It's got some nice oily length to it there in the glass. I'm not sure whether you can see that or not, those playing at home.
Ooh.
It's quite floral on the nose. And I would describe it almost as floral but buttery. Yeah. Like it's very smooth.
He's either you got a slight lag, Luke. You got a slight lag, and you're there, and you're just going. He's taking a hell of a stonker of that one.
That's lovely. Very, it's got an oily butteriness to it on the mouthfeel as well.
Yeah.
Very, I want to say reminiscent of a corn spirit, but not as vanilla-y and not as.
And surprisingly, a lot of people are telling us that as well, saying there's like a bit of a bourbon sweetness to it.
Yeah, and I don't like bourbon, but this is. It feels like it sits between a bourbon and an unpeated, sweeter whiskey, just on the sweeter unpeated whiskey side of that scale.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Does that sound about, So it's almost, I could use that as an introductory whiskey to people who haven't drunk a whiskey before. I can say, have some of that and you'll be hooked.
Yes, we've been having a lot of gin drinkers who go, don't like whiskey, and you go, here, try this, it's light, have a go. And then they taste it and they go, oh, actually whiskey's not bad. So and start that dialogue going. So it was interesting you've brought up that same point. So
and on the finish, it's almost sort of marshmallowy.
Yeah.
100% agree, mate. 100%.
Yeah, I'm just, I had some marshmallows yesterday, so it's the front of mind flavor to me. And just a packet of marshmallows on the finish. That's, lovely.
Yeah.
I describe it as a playful whiskey. It's one you taste, and that marshmallow note, it's like, because it's reminiscent of, memories, being kids and everything like that. It's got that really fun connection, and it's a great entry point, I think, into whiskey, because it's a soft entry into whiskey. So, can I just stop there? I just want to go right to the top, and because there's people that'll watch this and not know what we're even talking about right now. So for those that don't know, so Nick Hope is the very first distiller in Australia to make a rice whiskey. And rice is not something typically you would think of when you think of whiskey. You think of rye, you think of wheat, you think of barley, you think of corn, but not rice. But rice is a cereal grain and so does come under the classification of whiskey. So it is a true, authentic whiskey in any shape or form. Nick is a trailblazer in what he's done. And to be honest, he's copped a bit of flack because people think it's not a whiskey. And it is a whiskey. So why don't we start with Nick? Go to the top. How you started your distillery, Dusty Barrel, why? And why did you go rice?
Well, like, yeah, I love my malt whiskies, love all that. But there was something from the Tasmanian Whiskey Academy with Anne Gigney. She said, what's your point of difference? You know, when you go out there, there's, you know, what is it going to be? You know, and that always sat with me. I do enjoy my sake and, you know, the baijus and the like. And I was like, you know what, going to give this a go. And basically went in because no one was doing it. So I thought, yep, let's do the experiment. And I was really surprised through the process. I can understand why people don't do it. You get this real clag, gloopy stuff that you've got to try and get rid of. And you can't get all the alcohol, but it's surprisingly high yielding compared to some of the other barleys and so on. So, yeah. But
so how does Hamo's come in with a good question. How does a rice whiskey differ from a sake or a soju or a baijiu? What are those different things?
Yeah, so you've got your rice wines that you make. So you can basically with the – yeah, so sake is a wine. That's correct. Yep, so it's not distilled. So they go through a whole heap of process on the fermentation. It's a long ferment on the grain. And then in clay pots, so it gives a real earthy taste and that type of thing. So it's not distilled. So we basically do make pretty much a rice wine to begin with, not letting it sit as long. It does take a long time to ferment. It takes about 4 weeks.
Oh, wow.
So because you've got to aerate the sludge, basically, to get all the CO2 out. Once it settles, you get this real champagne sort of taste, like the bubbles in it, and then we distill it from there. But we do use koji, so we use basically steam the rice, sprinkle it with koji, and make up the koji, use the koji spores, make koji, and then we add that to our mix, so that breaks down all the starches basically for your sugar.
Koji, Nick.
So koji is a fungus, basically. And for rice, you don't have the enzymes. I mean, we can use alpha amylase and that to do the same process.
Yeah.
But the koji breaks down the long chains as well as short chain in sugars. So that's where you get that creamy texture from and the marshmallows. It's almost like a sour mash sort of flavouring.
So the koji acts effectively like an enzyme. Would that be the way to describe it?
Yep.
And just breaking down the chains. Guys, I've got to duck for a sec, check the still, because I'm at the end of a run. I'll be back in 2 seconds. Well, it'll work. No. Don't worry. Frank will keep you company. Frank,
Oh, God.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Oh, fuck off.
Yeah, he's drunk.
I've had one whiskey.
So a baijiu is distilled?
It is, yeah. They could use rice, potato, sorghum is the main one that is used. They're using all the different grains that way. But, right. and potatoes, etc.
So how does your whiskey then compare as a new make to a baijiu and to another rice based spirit?
Yeah, really close.
Right. So is the main difference between the barrel aging process, or what's the if you took baijiu and put it in a barrel, are we getting a rice whiskey, or what? Can you explain a little bit more about the whiskey process?
Yeah, so the whiskey price, and well, I mean, being rice being the cereal grain, that's why I can call it whiskey.
Yeah.
Whereas the guys, when they're using the sorghum and that, they can't.
Gotcha.
So they're doing the baijiu. Yeah, that doesn't meet that terms or the criteria.
Gotcha. So it's purely just an issue of terms, because quinoa is a cereal grain, isn't it?
Yeah, but you got, that's really low yielding. You need a lot.
Yeah. I know the guys who make Upshot, Whippersnapper over in WA, did a quinoa whiskey, and it didn't become a staple for them because I think it was just too fucking hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here we go. Hammo's coming with a question. My question may be premature, but what cask are you used for whiskey as opposed to, say, a sake?
So sake, they would use clay pots for 2 years. Opposed to casks. So they, like Grand Talon, who do the rice whiskey, they do clay pots for 2 years and then 4 years in an oak barrel. So there's they get that real earthiness to it. But yeah, sake's normally, what the aged one is normally a clay pot to basically get it to mature.
So what is it getting from the clay pot in terms of maturity, just to clarify the difference? Obviously, when you're in a barrel, you're getting the tannins and the you're extracting the flavors from the barrel. What are they extracting? Are they extracting anything from a clay pot?
Pretty much nothing. It's almost like putting it in stainless, except the clay is keeping it at a constant temperature.
Mm.
It is from the literature that I've read and talking to a few people, the sake makers.
Yep. Okay. Is that a process that you think you would trial to do a clay pot and then put it in a barrel at a later stage?
Yeah, I'd love to try that just to see what it does. Because apparently it does, with it like sitting in a barrel, everything sort of blends and sort of, marries. And I suppose that's what it's doing in the clay pot as well, just without the interaction of wood.
Yeah, right. Okay. So, as Hammo says, with that said, what sort of a cask are you using, and have you, and to extrapolate out a little bit further, what have you experimented with?
So I've got a Oloroso sherry cask at the moment. That was a 250 litre. I've got two bourbon barrels trying out. But this one that you've got now, and the one that we've put out, we're in third use barrels, which we didn't rechar or toast or anything. It was just
Wow. Third
barrels.
Yep.
And the reason why we wanted to do that is to see what the rice would do. What's the flavor profile coming through? So, yep.
And what have you? So in third use, so this is your third use or your second use of that barrel?
So I got them. I had them from Riverbourne, so from Martin Pye.
Yep.
He'd used them three times. And then I was the fourth use, basically. So they're tired barrels.
Mm.
The bourbon barrels, I'm getting a hint of vanilla coming from those, but not in a major way. So testing.
I poured myself a taster of the new make.
Yep.
And that is thick.
Rice is really oily, surprisingly oily.
That surprises me how oily it is. I would not have expected that from a rice. On the nose, again, very floral. Very smooth, it's still sweet. It does have a good sweetness to it. I don't get as much of that. Oh, no, I do. The marshmallow back comes end through. To it.
Comes to the back. Yeah.
Definitely. I think after it's obviously rested a bit in the barrel, it becomes more pronounced.
Yep.
Rice is quite starchy too, isn't it, from just my general knowledge? And I know when you boil rice, you know, you rinse off the starch and that. So I'm assuming that be very different than barley or rye or anything else to work with.
Yeah, it really does break down to this real. It's really fine, like your rice flour. If you wet that, that's what the sort of you get that gummy sort of finish.
Yeah.
And well, I mix that.
What do you do with that? How much rice would you put into a typical brew?
So I use probably about 220 kilos in about 900 litres of water.
Okay. That's really, yeah.
And that'll get up around about 19% ABV. Wow. Right.
Really? 19%?
19%. That's a really high yielding.
Yeah.
And the reason why I went polished, the sushi rice has got a, you know, without the husk, and it's slightly polished. And it's a bit more starchy than some of the other brown rice, isn't it? And that's why you don't get that earthiness like you do with brown rice. So this is a little more sweeter. It comes out a lot sweeter. So I've played around with different rice, jasmine rice, brown rice, just to see what, you know, will the jasmine rice give you the floral note, but it doesn't. So
yeah, really? Okay.
Yeah. And then the clag I mix with grain, and then the local farmers' cows get it, and they usually have a good nap. They usually have a good nap after that.
I'll bet. God, 19% glue. Yeah. Goodness, God! If we had that in primary school, we all would have been having that.
Yeah. So one thing too, Nick, that. You know, you and I talk a lot about technology, you know, whiskies, et cetera, but you've gone out there and you've put yourself out there in rice world on the global scale, and you've developed really solid technical relationships with others out there. So what's been the learnings from that? Because everyone's doing things differently. But you're a one man in Australia. You don't have anyone in Australia you can bat with. No. So you have to bat with overseas.
Yeah, so I've been talking to three different distilleries in the States. So Q, JT Malik, Golden Beaver Distillery. Chris has been absolutely fantastic just to have a chat. Talking about temperatures, using champagne yeast versus an M1 yeast. You know, what can that give? And then talking about also their mash bills. So they're actually doing Golden Beaver is doing a 61% rice and then corn, barley, rye. So they're doing their bourbon sort of take, but using rice. And they said that's sweet with a bit of a spice to it. Just learning from them with, you know, quantities, like how much to put through, like how much koji, how much yeast, and then aerating. Just some of them got continuous still, so they, because it's so fine, it just goes through, they don't have to filter it. Whereas some do have a filter press, like similar to Waterford's
mash press. Yeah
mash press. And then they run that in their pot still so they don't burn on the bottom. So just talking with them, they're all wrapped that we're doing, you know, that someone in Aussie is doing it. And the amount of info that they're giving me is just phenomenal.
So if you had to come up with any sort of new technologies to work with the rice?
Yeah, it's not your standard mash tun. It's basically a giant cooker. That you're stirring and then cooling it down and fermenting on that. So you're basically like fermenting on grain.
Right.
So it's a completely different process in that regard, because if you add your koji, I do the koji and yeast at the same time. So as soon as it converts to sugar, your yeast is eating that sugar straight away, turning it to alcohol. And that's why it takes so long, the process.
Mm. And you mentioned that because it is so thick and claggy that you've got to aerate constantly. Yeah. How do you do that without standing over it 24 hours a day?
So I do it twice a day. So you stand there, right. And like, so from the Saki guys, they taught me to do it only twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
Try and do it 12 or 18 hours apart. So the CO2 gets trapped in the rice pulp, basically, and then starves everything of oxygen. So you've got to aerate it and get it.
What is that process? Are you just getting a big paddle in there and stirring the shit around? Or
I've got a stainless steel, like paint, similar but to a paint stirrer, stainless steel one, and a big kick-ass drill, and just stand over the top. And gives you a good chest and shoulder workout when you're doing that one.
Yeah, right. So have you got individual control over each of your pecs now, or
you're coming close? it's like a bit of work, but pretty good.
Yeah, right. Well, Lord Smeg says that a little late to the party, but your rice whiskey was very well received last weekend. The steel didn't hold up well en route to WA, though. Oh, no.
Okay.
Damn it.
Well, let me know.
I hope there was some left for you to enjoy when you got home.
Oh, and yeah. Touch base with me.
Circling around, back around to while Crafty was out, and we're talking about casks. What are your thoughts on differing casks? Sherry, cognac, tequila, Chardonnay barrels.
So I've actually worked with Andrew Young. So Youngie, I've got one of his casks at the moment, which is nearly, that'll be coming up to 2.5 years now. So that one's pretty close to be coming out, and that one's you can really taste the tawny in that one coming through. So we've got really good berries and the floral and the marshmallow coming through again, so that's quite different to any whiskey I've had. So close with them, actually.
I would think, now this is just me thinking, I reckon a white wine casks, I reckon that could be very interesting, Nick, because it's a delicate whiskey in some ways. And your white wines, like Chardonnay or whatever, I reckon that would be an interesting way to go.
Well, given the sweetness, could you accentuate the sweetness with a Riesling?
Riesling?
Would that go too sweet? I mean, based on what I was tasting there, I mean,
yeah, a lot of fun. And this is the cool thing, because it is a different direction, as in singular grain, but also you can use it with malted barley, with rye and all that. And then on top of that, you start talking about the different barrel profiles you can go. Mate, it's a playground. Rice land's a playground, I reckon.
Yeah, so I do have a Pilsner malt and rice in barrel. That one's got the honey hay, and then you've got, it's almost like a kid's cereal where you get that frosting coming through.
That
sugar powder. So that one's, even though it's young, I put that in cask at about 55 ABV just to see what it does in the cask. But the Riesling is really interesting.
Yeah. It is. Before we go,
how old is that? How long has that been in a barrel?
That was 2 years, 3 months.
2 years, 3 months, right.
Right. Before we go much further, we should acknowledge the long-suffering employee of Craftworks who's decided to join us. And what's in your glass, my friend?
Hopefully the same as in all yours.
Not Crafties.
My bottle's at home. It's actually on my home bar.
That's not where it's meant to be.
Well, I drink it. I'm sorry. I just drink it. I did a swapsie with Nick for a bottle.
I didn't realize I was supposed to save some for you.
That's all right. I've still got mine. Got plenty. I only cracked that open today.
I needed something. I just needed something to tell with it.
Well, I'll give you a little bit more of mine when you come around next. Maybe. If I don't finish it. We'll see. So Lord Speck says he ended up with 3/4 of a bottle remaining. So crisis averted. He's still got a lot left.
The immediate crisis.
Immediate crisis averted, absolutely. There will be crisis when that 3/4 of a bottle is gone. Yeah, yeah. So you've got a lot of room to experiment with barrels.
Yep.
What sort of experimentation have you done with different yeasts? So, of course, you've got to use the koji to break down the starches and give the yeast something to feed on. How far down the yeast rabbit hole have you gone?
Just starting to look at, different liquid yeast now. So to give us different esters, just to see what that does. Looking at ones that give us more floral notes to sort of just pick that up a bit more. But I don't want to overtake the back end of this whiskey. So I just want something just to pep it up a little bit. So, a bit of homework on that one, talking with states as well, what they're doing. Some are doing a secondary yeast, so they'll use a champagne yeast, like after a week, they'll throw it in because the koji is still active to try and give some different esters. So they're the things that I'm going to give a go. It's a big exploration.
I would imagine that the Kyvek yeast would probably burn out too quickly, wouldn't it? If it takes a while for
it might be too slow with the process of the koji breaking it down.
Yeah. You'd have a bit of a fight on your hands with those.
It comes through a lot of your pineapple tropical notes as well. Which might monster. So Nick, so you've got single malt whiskey, you've got rice whiskey, and you've released your first product, a year ago, was it? Or longer?
It'll be just over a year now.
Just over a year. So you're new on the scene as far as releasing product. How are you going out there? How are you finding it, and how are you getting the message out about rice in particular, but also your whiskies in general and your gin?
So I've done a couple of the whiskey festivals where you just go in and basically try and as you say you stand out the front and drive them in to your stand. I learned pretty quickly not to say try my rice whiskey. Because straight away people have a preconceived idea of the sake and all that. So what you say is, here, try this whiskey, it's pretty light. Tell me what you think. And then, they'll smell it and go, oh, that's like a bit of Isla. And then, oh, hang on, tastes a bit like a bourbon. And you can just see their brain nearly explode. Because it's, when you do tell them it's rice, they go, nah, rice can't do that. So you really have that, it's a good discussion point. Some people are just, as soon as you tell them it's rice, nah, yuck, don't like it. And you go, that's fine. It's not for everyone. So it's an education now. To get people on board. I was with Noble Bootleggers with Dan, and we did a dinner, so a four-course meal. So I had my two whiskies and he had two, and the chef tailored it around our whiskey, and we got to talk to the punters and go through it, and we got some pretty good feedback from that night. So, so we're just trying to get that message out there now, and just educate, saying smells like whiskey, looks like whiskey, and bloody taste like it. So, it's an outlier with being an outlier too far. So still approachable.
So to that end, Hamo raises an interesting point. So there's no tasting notes on your website. How do you describe your single malt and your rice whiskey?
Yeah, so the single malt is basically, or the whiskey that we got is basically off a German beer recipe, the old O'Braun a sour beer. So, you know, you've got your Munich, Pilsner, wheat, specialty malts in there. So that one there is a nice chewy one. It's complex, you know, and it's a real sipper and explore. Yeah, you get really good biscuit notes coming through, toffees, through that one, with berry as well. And then, yeah, the rice whiskey is floral on the nose. And then, yeah, working through it, you get, yeah, marshmallows. I get some toffee in that, but it's very creamy texture, which is surprising. And tasting the new make, I get that creaminess as well. So that's actually from the rice. So not impactful at all.
Creamy and buttery is definitely a word and descriptor that I gravitate to. It does have that real rich, luscious feel without being sickly sweet. It is sweet, but it's not sickly sweet.
Yeah. We did it at 48 to the right. Missed that one, Craig?
I said it's not sickly sweet. It's sweet, but it's not sickly sweet. Mm. It's it would be interesting, I would imagine, in cocktails. Yeah, and the new make in cocktails would be interesting because that creamy nature and just that flavor profile, that marshmallow note. I reckon some mixologists would have fun with that.
So how have people been using it? And what sort of mixing have you experimented with?
I've done it with had lemonade and a slice of lime on it, just to see what I do, and it actually comes out really nice. And then I've had other people tell me that they've used a ginger ale to just sort of play around with it, and they reckon it actually comes through really nice. Breaks up that ginger a little bit, makes it a bit sweeter. Mm-hmm. Haven't played around too much on cocktails.
I would imagine the new make could be used quite nicely in a mojito.
Ooh,
yeah. I'd have a crack at that.
Yeah. Yep. You can go and make one. I want to change direction. I want to talk about stills because, Nick, you got a story behind your still. It's not a Napluer out of Tasmania. It's not a Bernsey still, it's not a Chinese still as in standard configuration. It's you went down your own line. So tell us about your still and explain how it works because it's got a certain name, isn't it? It's a pot still, but it's got a certain name.
Yeah, so the column looks like a Gatling gun. So I was talking to a guy at he's craft stills in the US. And he has his own stills called Gatling stills. So we were talking about that with the column itself looks like a Gatling gun it's got 16 tubes. So we wanted to get as much copper in our system as we could. And it's a gas fired still. So, which is not something that a lot of people do.
Big ass barbecue still.
Absolutely. So a lot of testing went into that still. So with the authorities doing, full test, with CO2, oxygen, the whole lot. So we had that approved as an appliance, which has been fantastic because that gets you through the regulatory stuff. So it's a real unique still. And when you get, because we have the ventilation running, if it decides to blow, wind blow through the tubes, it actually stalls it. And you can actually hear it just rain back down into the pot and then fire up again. So, yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah, right. I'm just trying to pull a picture out of the Instagram right now. While I do that,
talk amongst yourselves.
The process of getting it registered or approved as an appliance, what does that mean?
So because it's a gas fired still, I had to go through a whole heap of safety measures. So basically, I've got a heap of fail safes on it. So I've got an exhaust system on it. So if that switches off, it turns all the relays off, no more gas. So if I have a power outage, I've got probes into the still so it can't boil dry. So once it gets to a certain point, it'll shut the still down. It's got the blow off valves and the like on it as well. So if any of the gas flames blow out, it just shuts the whole system down. So yeah, and we had to actually put it into a critical mode, and then it passed all the testing, so therefore it got registered as an appliance.
Put it into a critical mode. So you had to try and get it to blow up.
To shit itself and see if it will blow up.
Yeah.
Was that nerve-wracking?
Absolutely.
So I've flashed it up on the screen here for those playing at home, and we can see it is a very big copper pot, all copper, top to bottom there, with and you can see those. How many tubes did you say coming out the top?
So I got, I think it's 16 in total.
16 in total. Oh, here we go. Here's a better picture. Let me try and get this one.
It's such an unusual thing. So your condenser basically sits directly on top of your pot. There's no line arm.
No, it condenses to the side. So I've still got a line arm and a condenser.
I found it on a picture. I'm just trying to get it on. I'm just trying to download it. Here we go.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I get it.
It looks like the inside of a condenser.
Yeah. I get it now. Wow. I didn't realize it's those individual tubes.
Yep.
They're not coming to a central tube. They're individual. That's a lot of copper contact.
Yeah. So, and that's why on a nice slow run, even at 65-70%, it's an easy sipper straight up.
Yeah. That's got to be more copper contact than almost anything else in production.
And as soon as the wind goes through those tubes, it really does. Just it acts like a deflag, and will just drop everything back to the bottom.
Yeah, right. So going through your Instagram, I'm just trying to find where the picture was. I see you've put a jacket around those tubes?
Yeah. So on my stripping run, I put a jacket around it, so therefore the wind doesn't act on it, because I just want to try and strip it as fast as I can,
right?
And then on the final run I'll take it off.
Okay. And what's that jacket made out of?
Easy,
just a foil insulating system that I use. A lot of sheds have it as an insulation system.
Okay, so literally just a wrap.
Yep.
Wrap it around. How do you fix it? Just got some ratchet straps or something?
Oh, I just use tape, duct tape, good old duct tape.
Brilliant. What can't you do with duct tape, really?
Number one tool in the distillery. Go back to the image. I just want to ask some questions about when I look at it. I haven't seen it for a while. So what am I looking at on the right-hand side? It goes into the wall, Nick. What's that?
So that's the actual heat extractor, so the fan underneath to suck all the CO2 outside.
Yeah, gotcha.
So
and that's you got it sitting on a base, so the gas burner is all enclosed. It's not exposed. Yep.
So there's an inch gap all the way around it underneath with those covers on.
Yep.
So the air is just getting drawn up and under. And then the flue that we put on the back there, we actually had to work out the cubic meter rate to extract. And then that was the optimum point to do the best extraction. So then we put the hole through.
Gotcha. And your line arm, so it comes straight out of the shotgun. And then all those chambers, so it's vapor coming through all those individual tubes, which go to that central point just before the line arm. And then it goes straight up through the line arm, which is just horizontal. There's there's no angle on that, is there? It's just straight across.
Flat.
Yeah.
Here's another image.
Yeah, okay, now we're looking at the power.
Showing the business end. And if I can, here we go, found the one I was looking for, showing the jacketed. So you can see the jacket there on the back.
Right behind there. Yeah, it's the same material as what's on the walls.
Yeah, gotcha.
Looks like it.
Gotcha.
And here's another view. There we go. Pretty.
Yeah, and that front cover on that particular stripping run, it gets pretty hot. The bolts that I had shot off, so I had to use that sledgehammer to hold the guard up there while I was finishing my run. So it's amazing what you do as a distiller, what tools you use, and how you just make things work.
Yeah,
you've got to be part MacGyver, don't you?
Absolutely.
Well, yeah. I couldn't change a light bulb at home. Andrea used to do that. We'd blow a light bulb and I'd just point it and go, you're the engineer. But I've had to learn. I've MacGyvered my way out of some amazing situations, as have most distillers and brewers. The condenser, that's quite small in relation to the actual still, but I get that the condenser is probably doing a lot of work there, isn't it? The shotgun is doing a lot of work. Shotgun.
Yeah. So in that is very similar to the column, but it's got a three-way path running in it. So it's not just a solid flow.
Yeah.
It's slowed down. So
yeah, right. Gotcha. Very cool. Very unique.
It's super unique.
It's still like that in Australia that I'm aware of. There might be, but I'm not aware of one. You've gone a direction of whiskey making, which is not your safe traditional way, and you've gone the same way with your still design. And I know you spent a lot of time researching it and getting it to how you want. Hats off, mate. Hats off.
Mm. Well, as Hamo says, wow, everything about Dusty Barrel screams innovation, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Mm.
It does.
Totally.
So for those who live in Sydney, just to give you a little heads up, the Oak Barrel in Sydney, which is my spiritual home and many Australian distillers' spiritual home, we're going to be doing a little sesh with Riceman in the future. So you'll get to taste it in Sydney. So details to follow. It's in planning right now. But Nick's returning to the Oak Barrel. He came when we did the Aussie Craft Distiller Shooting the Shit Waterford episode, where we had Dave Withers from Archie Rose as guest distiller, Nick Hope as guest distiller, and me as guest distiller. So, Nick's returning, and we're going to do rice whiskey.
Although you can, of course, just buy a bottle or two from the website, which I put into the links, and that is on the screen, dustybarreldistillery.com.au.
Yep.
Well worth having. I think anyone who's a whiskey collector and likes to have a bit of a range and likes to try things and experiment and just explore the flavors, I think if this is not part of your collection, then you're missing out. It is something special.
So for our first release for the rice, we put it in the Royal Melbourne and the Sydney show just recently, and we picked up silver medal in both of them. So getting a score of 85.6. So we're pretty happy
with
that.
Round of applause.
That's fantastic. Yeah. And did you with entering into a competition that has never seen a rice whiskey before, did you have to do any sort of explaining? Did you have a little card on it to say what the hell they were drinking, or is it just here it is?
I had to put down, because both of them asked for what's in it? What is it?
Yep.
So I put down 100% rice, and the judges' comments have come back. The head judge is like, this is a category to watch. Well done. So keep it coming. So, yeah, it was really good to see the judges come back with really positive response.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, as anything, yeah, I've got room to grow. So, get better.
Have you had anybody approach you wanting to get into rice as well? Any other Australian distillers looking to do it?
Yeah, I've had one ring and just go through the process and trying to pick my brains with it, which is great. So they were surprised at how much information I passed on. But at the same time, I think it's a good category. I'd like to see that category grow. I think it's pretty special.
Well, certainly, looking at other categories and the transformative figures of those categories, when it comes to Tewa, Mark Brania is the first name that pops up. Oh, don't. I saw your ears perk up there, Crafty.
I flinched.
You're a terrorist.
Tawarist.
Tawarist, sorry.
Tawarist, not a terrorist.
Oops, slip of the tongue there. I reckon we could see Nick Hope and Dusty Barrel up there in the future as pioneers, the pioneer of the rice whiskey space. And I think that would be quite exciting to see.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good.
Mm.
And there's a lot to explore. It is absolutely terroir.
Well, okay. Seeing as we're on the topic. So your sushi rice, you said, is grown in New South Wales.
Yep.
How much rice do we produce? We produce a lot of rice in Australia, don't we?
Hell of a lot.
Yep. Hell of a lot. Do we produce it in multiple areas around the country, or is it all up in Queensland or I don't know where they are?
Riverina. Through that the where those junction points are of the states, New South Wales, Vic, South Oz, and it's right through those points. And I believe up in Queensland there's an area in which they grow the rice as well.
Would the terroir of rice be something that you would explore as well? Is that something on your radar for the future?
Yeah, there is, because there's Sunrise has actually got an Australian varietal that they're growing. So that's something new that they've developed. So I'd love to see what that is and get my hands on that. You get a quote from them. They said, as soon as you buy 20 ton, we'll give you an account. So,
20 ton, and you're using 200 kilos in a 900 liter wash.
Yeah.
You're going to be there a while.
It'll take me a while.
Wow. That's a lot of rice to drop in your driveway.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a lot of drunk cows in the neighborhood.
Oh, fuck, yes, absolutely. Wow. that's incredible. I wonder whether, obviously looking at the Australian rice, we always want to go for Australian-sourced produce. When looking at Tewa, of course, there's a lot of rice around Asia. All through China, Japan, Vietnam, Thailand, Cambodia, you've got everywhere growing it. it would be interesting to see what flavors you get differently from each of those regions, if it were possible to source region-specific sushi rice.
So the Grand Talon one is quite different, even though, I mean, part of the reason is they use the clay pots. And when we get Hayden on from Grand Talon, he can go through that. But, yeah, you can taste the difference between. It's both a rice product. There's certain notes that I can pick up in both. But, yeah, they're quite different in their profile.
Mm. Interesting.
That's a good segue into our next episode. So for those that are interested in tonight's session with Nick and Rice Man, we're going to go another level on this because rice whiskey is very exciting. It's a brand new category. So we are going to be chatting with Grand Talon from China with Nick on as well. And we're going to just be having a big conversation about rice whiskey and what's going on. So this is sort of part one of a two-parter. So yeah, very exciting actually.
That will be very exciting. And now so today is the first I've heard of this. So so Grand Talon. Yeah, I must have missed something. I've been busy, you know. I got shit going on and people to see and stuff to do and whatnot.
Nick, do you want to tell them what's going on?
Yeah, so Red.
Who are Grand Talon?
So Red Pearl Distillery in China has a brand at their brand out called Grand Talon. And that's they're the first rice whiskey manufacturers in China.
Right. So
they've just released in Australia and did a whole festival. So they've actually got a rice wine as well. I've been conversing with them and, swapping notes with those guys as well.
Okay, I had a little bit of a heart attack there. So Grand Talon Rice Whiskey, I saw for 1,098. That's Hong Kong dollars.
Yeah.
What that translates to, I don't know. So they are in China, and the person we'll be talking to is in China as well.
Yeah, he's the Australian ambassador, Hayden Wood. So Justin, the head distiller basically Red Pearl, he's not really wanting to come on board at this point. He's not very good with the talking with the people. He likes his craft instead and just making it.
I get that.
So Hayden's going to come on and he lives and breathes it, and he's got the same passion as myself with rice, so it should be good.
Yeah, right. So just reading the descriptor, I'm just going to put this is literally the first descriptor I've found. I'm going to put a link in here into the chat for those playing at home. Using 700-year-old artisanal methods to inspire a spirit that is that is as pure as it is delicate. The aging journey begins with maturation in traditional clay vessels before resting in a combination of virgin French and American oak barrels, then carefully blended to reveal soft aromas of vanilla, hay, and ginger, followed by a rich and textured palette of creme brulee, pumpkin pie, and pimento.
Wow.
Sounds pretty fucking special. There you go. Is there anything else you could do with your spent grain other than feed it to the cows?
No, not like really.
No, too much.
Yeah, there is, because I've tried cheesecloth bags to try and in a wine press to squeeze as much out as I can. It's too freaking messy.
Really?
You just get stuff squeezing out everywhere, and it's just not fun.
So how much, could you put a figure on how much you're losing?
Yeah, probably a good 8%.
8%, and you're already coming out at 16%.
Yep. Yeah, but sometimes 19% ABV.
Yeah, right. And you're losing about 8% volume.
Volume, yeah.
Off there. That's a lot of booze.
Yeah.
Wow.
Thanks, Ian.
So that's why I'm looking at a press myself to try and extract as much as I can, and then what my thoughts were is to dry it out again, crush it up, and make a rice flour.
So,
what about the Third Waters technique, the Scottish Third Waters technique, where they sparge, right, and then they sparge once, sparge twice, the third sparge, that becomes the starting waters for the next brew, so it's already got sugars in it. Is that?
Well, there's pretty much no sugars left once it's done.
Yeah. Okay.
So it pretty much gets everything, and that's why it's so fine, the granules of the rice left.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why it's such a pain to squeeze and the like to try and extract as much as I can.
Just a shit. But you're getting really high alcohol yield, so yeah. I mean,
yeah. So the press that you're looking at will literally just squeeze the shit out of it.
Yes, it's like
a wine press type thing.
No, yeah, like the beer ones where you got the panels, and
right, okay,
fills up and it squeezes, and then basically it rings it all out, and you're just dropping a cake. A rice cake,
mash press.
Yeah, right.
Mash press, yeah.
That'd probably be a good fire lighter.
Yeah.
In cake format.
Yeah. Smell all right.
That could work. That could work. Now, interestingly, when you're looking at the Grand Talon, it ends up being $118 on Dan's rather than $206. How does that work out? That's maybe astounding.
Maybe Dan Murphy's has not done the calculations right.
Maybe not. That's mental. So really what people should be doing is buying a bottle of Dusty Barrel and a bottle of Grand Talon and doing a rice off.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think that's a great idea.
Cool. Yeah, that would be cool because they're totally different, I would imagine, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they're very different. So, but as I was saying before, you still got a few notes in there that are the same, still the oiliness and all that as well.
Yeah.
But the Talon one, I get some earthy notes coming through, and I'd say that's from the clay pot.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Because you'd be picking up that minerality or clay. Yeah.
But that marshmallow note and that floral note still come through.
Yeah.
And that, like he said, creme brulee, I get that creamy texture coming through as well. So so there's some real definite markers.
Yeah right. So cool. With the back onto the clay pot side of things, so a mezcal, artisanal mezcal, is distilled in a clay pot. Nope, confusing my clay pots. Do they age it in a clay pot as well? Or no, maybe not.
Mezcal, I don't know.
No. Todd's shaking his head at me. No, so they distill it in a clay pot still, but not age it. So where would you get your clay pot from, or is that something you need to create?
Plastic.
Sorry, Todd?
I think after they distill it, they just stick it in a plastic bucket because it's not really aged as mezcal.
Yeah. Unless it's a Hoban or something like that that has a bit of age to it. but then that would be in a barrel rather than a clay pot. Yeah. So is the clay pot, how much research or how far down that rabbit hole have you gone?
It's expensive.
Really?
Yeah, that's surprising because the wine industry use it as well, the similar pots. And basically, yeah, to cart them here, because they weigh so much, the freight cost is just phenomenal. So I'd have to look for a local potter, I think, and say, make something that's 100 litres or something like that.
Yeah, I'm just trying to even do a Google search.
When you spare time and you've got nothing to do.
Yeah.
In your spare time, you can take up pottery. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, here we go.
I got a question why he's doing his research. So, Nick, you've just won a ticket from Qantas anywhere in the world. And you want to go and do some research? Where do you want to go?
I'll be heading to the US to go see JT Malik, and because they actually grow their own rice, and they do crawfish as well. So the crawfish basically eat the bugs from the bottom of the rice crop to keep it all healthy.
Yeah.
They've got their own process with their rice, so that's learning from the farm, basically, yeah, to basically to glass. So
pretty much across the Yabby, isn't it?
Yep. And then head across then to Golden Beaver and see what they're doing, because they're playing with barrels and yeast and different mash bills with rice. So go from the two different points.
And you'd also swing past Denver, of course, to see how a good friend, Mr. Todd Leopold from Leopold Brothers. And
That goes without saying. Got to see that.
Yeah, floor malting, three-chamber still, and doing all sorts of stuff. Holy crap.
There you go. There's some clay pots. Now, these specifically are fermented brown rice vinegar, but I imagine that something similar, all the rice wine pots that I'm seeing are looking similar to this.
Yep. So the large ones in the back is what I've been looking at.
Yeah, right.
I get those at Bunnings.
I was about to say, you buy that at Bunnings.
Yeah, you buy those at Bunnings. You just say, I'm not putting plants in and I'm putting alcohol.
But with
glazed ones. Yeah, they're cheap. Actually, putting one with a crack, they're even cheaper.
Oh, you can even get a nice ornamental one. There's all sorts of options from Bunnings. I don't know what you're talking about. Here you go. Here's one from Bunnings that actually looks quite bad. It's even got fucking handles.
Oh, come on, show us.
Here we go. Look at this. Oh, shit.
So is Bunnings one of our new sponsors, are they?
If Bunnings want to give us some money, they are more than welcome to do so. If anybody else would like to sponsor it.
I didn't know you were taking up gardening.
Look at that. Before. There you go. It's got handles and everything.
There you go.
There you go.
Very Roman. Very Roman.
Yeah. That'd be like, make you Aussie there.
Yeah.
I can't find these things, these Japanese clay pots in Australia. I'll just use that.
That's the definition of MacGyvering shit, that is.
Right. Now, this is just getting silly, people. We do have an
right. Now, Hammer asked an actual serious question. What sort of angel share do we reckon would be lost from a clay pot?
A lot. Be very poor.
Be porous,
yeah. That would be an interesting one to find out. I guess you can only experiment, really.
Got a nice glazing outside.
If it has a glaze on the outside, yes, maybe.
It'd be like varnishing a barrel. Makes no sense.
Well, it depends on what you're trying to get out of it. If you, a barrel, you're trying to get the flavors out of it.
You want oxidation in. It's a two-way process. If you varnish it, you're fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
We're going to have to ask these questions when we talk to Grant Allen. You'd better prepare him for some of these really deep dive technical questions.
And dumb questions.
such thing as a stupid question. Only stupid people.
This...
Ah, yes, there you go. It's a farm in Sedgwick, Victoria that has thousands of pots in ground for fermenting kimchi.
Oh.
They probably tell you where to get cost-effective pots.
So that would be
perfect.
Not their
so
pots.
So what do you age your whiskey in?
Look, a bit of kimchi flavour would work, wouldn't it?
Oh, the you'd never get the acid out. It would
permeate.
It would be vinegar whiskey. Yeah.
No. But there you go. But
good point. Good point. Maybe. NS Malcolm, thank you very much.
Yeah.
He's a new one. I don't recognize him.
No. Somebody new. Always good. Thank you for joining us. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button. Hit the subscribe button on YouTube. We'd love to get our numbers up. We're at 299. Look, if we can hit 300 by the end of tonight, I'd be really happy.
Tell them what happens when we get to 1,000. Go on.
We might start making a dollar.
Yeah,
But Crafty is going to drop a sick beat for us to use as our intro music.
So we don't have to pay royalties.
And thank you, Hammer. Yep, turn the notifications bell on.
Thank you, mate. Thank you. Time to wrap it up, I think. It's getting silly. Thanks, Nathan.
There you go.
Nathan. Oh, okay. Good point. I know.
Well, yes. Now, we're delving into silly territory. But yes, please do like and subscribe. Follow us for more. We do put these out every 2 weeks on a Thursday night at 8 p.m. And we do put them out live and unedited because, you know, quality. And laziness.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't have time to edit these things. But thank you, everyone, for joining us. Thank you, Nick, for joining us again. This would be your fourth time that we've actually had you on.
Second time.
We had you on for... We had you on with Waterford.
Yes. Yep.
We had you on early on to talk about. So this will be the third. No, third time. It is the first, course, because we also did a really quick little one when you launched the rice whiskey.
Oh, that's so
technically, technically four times. Our most frequent return guest. So thank you very much. Thank you for the samples. They were wonderful. I do highly recommend that anybody who likes to collect things and try things and experiment, get yourself some of that and definitely use it as a gateway drug for those non-whiskey drinkers that you know. I think that's a really good way to get them into the flavors of whiskey and they'll absolutely love it. Absolutely love it. So get onto the website, dustybarreldistillery.com.au and pick up a bottle or two.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you, everyone. Please do hit that like and subscribe button. We will be back in a couple of weeks. And thank you all for joining us and for your great questions. And yes, I will be hitting up Dan's for a sponsorship and Bunnings.
Bunnings more likely.
We'll try both. Thanks all. Have a good one. And we'll catch you all later. Nick, hang around. We're going to talk about the stuff we can't talk about with everybody else listening.
Oh, bitch. Right,
see y'all.